Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on the road, but broadcasting live 15 hours a week. This program is called Talk Back. Once a week, no guest, no in-depth investigative report, or commentary. Rather, the latest on health and healing, environmental issues, some other issues that are important, but throughout the entire program, you'll have a chance to call in and share your questions and thoughts and comments. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We look forward for your calls coming in. There's a new study that was just released from the Hospital of Sick Children Research in Toronto, Canada, published in the Cochrane publication, which is one of the most respected independent scientific organizations in the world. And it says, quote, consuming supplements and food containing probiotics may reduce the risk of antibiotic-associated diarrhea. And, quote, in the short term, taking probiotics in conjunction with antibiotics appears to be a safe and effective way of preventing diarrhea associated with infection. Now think of how many individuals end up with diarrhea when they take antibiotics, because the antibiotics kill the good and bad bacteria. The trouble is you don't recolonize good bacteria unless you start putting in foods and fibers and probiotics that will recolonize. You have 10 times more bacteria in the body than you have cells. And you have upwards of 100 trillion cells. So just imagine the amount of bacteria. Now the bacteria, when they're good, when you're eating fermented foods and like miso or sauerkraut or some form of non-dairy acidophilus culture, that's creating more and more and more good bacteria. Sugar and alcohol create bad bacteria. Refined carbohydrates and all types of cooked meat, bad bacteria. So when you look at the average American's diet, there's little wonder that we are not healthy because our bacteria are not healthy. And then on top of that, when they get an infection and they're given an antibiotic, they get worse. So this is just showing one more way that natural approaches makes a difference. For a long time, we have been challenging the use of artificial sweeteners. I can remember helping to lead the effort to ban saccharin, and before that, cyclamates. As the editor-in-chief of Caveat Emptor, which was one of America's, if not the only, consumer publication for years, and we were handling all the major issues, and everyone who worked for it was a volunteer, and we gave it away free. And we broke a lot of important stories. But we were all over this idea that saccharin, cyclamates, and other artificial sweeteners should be used. History shows we were correct. Now we're challenging Splenda, the sucralose, and we shouldn't be consuming. Here's additional support for that from Washington University School of Medicine. Quote, the artificial sweetener sucralose, or Splenda, is capable of changing the body's insulin response, and that's according to the Washington University School of Medicine in the journal Diabetes Care. What they did is they looked at obese individuals who suffered from diabetes who were using artificial sweeteners often. And it says, quote, Splenda does have an effect. One of the authors, Dr. Pepineau, research professor of medicine, said, quote, our results indicate that this artificial sweetener is not inert. It does have an effect, and we need to do more studies to determine whether this observation means long-term use can be harmful. So the researcher wanted to determine whether insulin or blood sugar levels are affected by the combination of sucralose and glucose. And, quote, when study participants drank sucralose, their blood sugar peaked at a higher level than when the artificial sweetener drank only water before consuming glucose. insulin levels also rose about 20% higher. So the artificial sweetener was related to an enhanced blood insulin and glucose response, end quote. Now think of all the people using artificial sweeteners under the belief that it will not cause an increase in their blood sugar. This study shows it does. Therefore, my suggestion is look at the scientific literature first, and the research we examine is independent research. There's no bias. I never trust without challenge any information that comes from an industry that has a vested interest in the outcome. So again, that's important because consider this. There are about 60 million pre-diabetics and about 25 million diabetics. So you're getting up there around 100 million people. Now, when you are diabetic or pre-diabetic, you're more at risk for heart attacks, strokes, cancer, arthritis. So you put all those together. There's no reason that we should have elevated blood sugars. We can control it, but not with the American diet. Now, one thing Americans take every day are statins. They even want to have teenagers now taking statins preventatively. And this is the latest on this from Christina Sarich from Natural Society. Statins, a joke, less than beneficial according to a Swedish study. Quote, a recent population-based study in Sweden evidenced that the massive utilization of statins has provided no benefit. I repeat, no benefit to Swedish people. In fact, three times as many statins were being taken by Swedes in the year 2000 than in 1998, yet the number of people dying from heart attacks were unchanged with all the statins. Statins have been used in the United States since 1987, when they were approved by the FDA as a pharmaceutical means to lower cholesterol through inhibiting an enzyme in the liver and other organs. Statins are one of the most widely prescribed medicines in the industrialized world, and they're extremely profitable. Now, statins account for billions of dollars a year in profits to companies like Merck and Pfizer. In recent years, Lipitor was one of the top-selling manufactured drugs in the country. It brought in $7.5 billion to Pfizer in 1 year, even as they crowded out generic drugs also classified as statins. Pfizer's patent has run out on Lipitor, but millions of people are still taking statins despite their ineffectiveness. And worse, statins have been shown to cause diabetes, type 2, memory loss, along with cognitive disorders. Not good. Now, many doctors are finding that their patients are suffering from side effects ranging from mild to debilitating, and growing evidence even links statins to Lou Gehrig's disease, debilitating neuromuscular disease. Big Pharma has definitely convinced both doctors and their patients that statins are the holy grail, and many patients then start to use them and don't get off. They assume that they'll have an immediate heart attack if they stop using it. The truth of the matter is that high cholesterol is less likely to cause a heart attack than factors like smoking and excessive alcohol consumption and diabetes. And furthermore, many healthy people are put on statins as a precautionary measure. I think that's absurd. While most of the studies conducted on statins were done on people who took them for short periods and often were very elderly or already had failing livers, few were conducted on healthy people, nor people who stayed on statins for life. Those studies were never done because they would result in a disparaging story for statins. And lastly, there are numerous healthy alternatives. For example, what I do is I suggest people have elevated cholesterol to get off the saturated fats and the trans fats, clean up their diet. Generally, in about 2 months, cholesterol starts to drop. But more importantly, there's also the studies of the homocysteine, C-reactive protein, and fibrinogen, LDL-HDL ratios. That's what's important, along with blood pressure and resting pulse. Now, when you have a good resting pulse, and a good to me would be, 50 to 60, that would be ideal. A good blood pressure, and then outstanding, let's say, 7 to 8 on your homocysteine levels, good C-reactive protein levels. Then you look at all that together and you see, gee whiz, if I can get my HDLs up, my LDLs down, then there's no reason I should have heart attack. Garlic, 5,000 milligrams a day. That helps big time. And also, I would use trimethylglycine, vitamin B6, folic acid, vitamin B12, also vitamin C probably 8 times a day, quercetin 8 times a day. I would use the garlic twice a day and trimethylglycine twice a day. And I would also look at N-acetylcysteine and alpha-lipoic acid, the omega-3 fatty acids, and black cumin seed oil. All those turn off inflammation, bring down your cholesterol, and then if there's still a problem, I would use, but not initially, polycosinol, 10 milligrams, and red yeast rice. So that would more than almost 99% of the people I have worked with see improvements using that. And therefore, your heart is healthier, the lining of your arteries are healthier, but that information is not getting out, unfortunately. Next up, can broccoli prevent or even treat asthma? There's a new study that shows that it can. Now, we know that asthma is an inflammation of the airway, and it can cause people who have it to have some debilitating conditions. And those exposed to any form of, let's say, inflammatory agents, especially in the air, can end up having severe irritation. So secondary smoke to an asthmatic is serious, but so is working around paint or any form of airborne pollutant. So what can we do? Broccoli. Broccoli is an outstanding source of what is called sulforaphane. Sulforaphane is a very important chemical in the body. And some studies done at UCLA determined that sulforaphane is a way of reducing free radical irritation and inflammation in the airways. And broccoli sprouts are extremely beneficial also. So I would be using broccoli sprouts probably twice a day, eating them raw, but also juicing them or throwing a lot of them into a blender. Quote, this is from the study. This is one of the first studies showing that broccoli sprouts, a readily available food source, offer potent biologic effect in stimulating an antioxidant response in humans. This strategy may offer protection against inflammatory processes and could lead to potential treatment for a variety of respiratory conditions. A major advantage of sulforaphane is that it appears to increase a broad array of antioxidant enzymes, which may help the compound's effectiveness in blocking the harmful effects of air pollution, end quote. And that was from the lead author on the study. So that's good. So we also know, by the way, that sulforaphane kills cancer cells, but doesn't hurt healthy cells. So on all levels, broccoli and broccoli sprouts are terrific for you. And finally, seaweed could make excellent nutritional supplements, according to the latest research that I have seen here. And red and brown seaweeds are rich in minerals, including iodine. A new study published in the peer-reviewed journal Biomedicine and Preventative Nutrition showed that two algaes, red seaweed and brown seaweed. Quote, the results suggest that both seaweeds have greater nutritional value and can be used as excellent nutritional supplements. They're high in fiber, they have protein, and they're excellent in their chlorophyll and proline. So that's all good. Also, red seaweed is very high in potassium and major fatty acids, including linoleic acid, and the essential amino acids, including valine, methionine, and lysine, and phenylalanine, are also found in both seaweeds. Most Americans simply don't consume seaweed. We should. We don't. And that's to our detriment. So that's just some suggestions. Also, soda and illegal drugs cause similar damage to your teeth. This is from the Academy of General Dentistry and published in the Peer Review Journal of General Dentistry. Quote, addicted to soda? You may be shocked to learn that drinking large quantities of your favorite carbonated soda could be as damaging to your teeth as methamphetamine and crack cocaine. The consumption of illegal drugs and abusive intake of soda can cause similar damage to your mouth through the process of tooth erosion. That's according to the latest study. Now, for this audience, you know that tooth erosion occurs when acid wears away tooth enamel. That's the glossy, protective outside layer of the tooth. And without the protection of enamel, teeth are more susceptible to developing cavities. And they also are easily more cracked and discolored and sensitive. So my suggestion is that you stop consuming diet sodas or any form of soda because of its acid level. But it's also true for caffeine as well. And if you do something good in the way of good biotics for your probiotics for your gut, you're actually helping your brain. Now, this is from Science Daily. I'll quote it. UCLA researchers now have the first evidence that bacteria ingested in food can affect brain function in humans. In an early proof of concept study of healthy women, they found that women who regularly consume beneficial bacteria known as probiotics, altered brain function, both while in resting state and in response to emotion recognition tasks. The study conducted by scientists at UCLA's Galen Gerald Oppenheimer Family Center of Neurobiology of Stress and published in Peer Review Journal Gastroenterology. So as I mentioned earlier in the program, start consuming probiotics. But I know a lot of you are consuming probiotics because I know a lot of you are consuming your favorite green and red powders. And look at the probiotics that you're consuming. All good for you. I'm Gary Knoll. For the rest of the program, it's open calls. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888, and I'll take the calls in just a moment. Please stay with us. Broadcast all over the world and all over the United States on different stations. We have a lot of Pacifica programs that are going on. People can hear those as well. So, and people are calling in. You can listen over the telephone. And right now, almost 99% of the people who listen are listening by downloading the program, going to progressiveradionetwork.com, the archives. But a lot of people are listening on the telephone. Anywhere in America and Canada, you can call a number and listen in. And I believe that we're getting an international line also, so you can listen anywhere in the world over a telephone. That number is 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. Let's go over and say hello now to John from Staten Island. Hi, John.
Hi, Gary. I had two questions. The first is about swelling in the knee that's lasted 2 weeks after a plane ride, what your recommendations would be.
All right. Well, first you want to get down the swelling, and to help bring down the swelling, you use cold. And because if you use hot on swelling, it'll swell worse. Then you want to make sure that you have a proper diagnosis. Why do you have swelling? Why do you have some form of edema, collection of water in the tissue? And therefore, you should have a internist or cardiologist check to see, do you have any problems with your circulatory condition? Then you should check to see, do you have inflammatory cytokines? That means you have some pro-inflammation going on in the body. If that's the case, that's not difficult to bring down the inflammation, but you want to make sure you know the source of it. You know, they can do a Doppler exam. There are different studies that can be done that are not invasive, so at least you know why you have the swelling. All right, that's one of the first things I would do. Once you have the diagnosis, then I'm able to give you a pretty easy to follow protocol. But for the inflammation, just look at anything that's anti-inflammatory. Right at the top of my list would be sulfur, and sulfur found in natural foods, garlic, onions. Those would be two of the best. In fact, garlic and onion are known to take down inflammation. Then I would look at vitamin C. Vitamin C is a natural diuretic and helps to flush excess water or at least rebalance water. I would look at grapeseed extract and grape skin extract. Those are also important. And also, I would look at N-acetylcysteine, NAC. That's important as well. The B complex is important too. Now, is this the first time that you've had inflammation like this?
Yes. I had a small injury in the hamstring. When I got on the plane, my calf swelled up, and then the swelling went down in the calf, and then it went up to the knee, and it stayed that way for 2 weeks. First time ever.
All right. Have you used acupuncture?
I've used it for other things in the past.
I would definitely try acupuncture also.
What about the hyperbaric oxygen chamber and infrared therapy?
I wouldn't use either of those till I get the cause of the inflammation and the swelling.
Okay.
Generally, inflammation is letting you know that there is an infection or an injury, and it sounds like in your case, it's an injury that causes swelling and redness, and it's warm and tender. And the proteins are called cytokines, cyto, C-Y-T-O,
mm-hmm.
kines, K-I-N-E-S. And what they do, they actually go after any of the pathogen and repair damaged tissue. And you have to have just the right amount. If you have just the right amount, it works on your behalf. If you have too much, it works against you. And the B-complex you need for tissue repair. Vitamin C for all healing, but it's one of the best single ways of reducing inflammation, especially buffered. Carotenoids, where you can get that from your, let's say, sweet potatoes and yams. Those are good. The essential fatty acid, coconut oil, black currant seed oil, flaxseed oil, primrose oil, and the fish oil. And that is known to reduce inflammation. And then you might want to look at proteolytic enzymes because they help in healing the tissue and turning off inflammation. And then wheatgrass juice, probably 3 times a day, 2 ounces, because it's loaded with superoxide dismutase. And SOD, superoxide dismutase, helps reduce inflammation and infection. And then one specific nutrient that would be a superstar for inflammation and swelling is bromelain. Bromelain, brome, B-R-O-M-E, lain, L-A-I-N. That has very powerful anti-inflammatory activity, and it also helps break down fibrin. And fibrin forms around the inflamed area, and then that blocks blood and lymphatic vessels from draining. That's why sometimes it's important to get a physiologist that goes in and does deep tissue trigger point therapy and then releases, that opens it up, gets your system stimulated. Then we have to look at beta-1,3-D-glucan, which fights inflammation, and then aloe vera juice 4 times a day and bilberry extract reduces inflammation, boswellia and turmeric, which is curcumin, both in, do the same, and cat's claw and cayenne at a higher rate, but not everyone's the same. So you have to start at a heat index and go up gradually and see what your body can handle. Remember, even though it feels like your stomach's on fire, there's no actual inflammation. So it's really good for you. And then red clover and stinging nettle root. So lots of green juices.
Right.
Okay.
May I also ask you if you can say something about Epstein-Barr?
Well, Epstein-Barr is a group of viruses. And do you have Epstein-Barr?
Yes, I've had a diagnosis of that, and it comes maybe every like year or two. And about a month or two ago, I had a bout of it for about 2 weeks.
Okay. Well, Epstein-Barr is easy to deal with. I have seen one of the best ways in the world, because it can lead to a lot of people to being fatigued, even misdiagnosing chronic fatigue syndrome. And it's viral. Therefore, I would recommend oral vitamin C, but also dimethylglycine, DMG, that enhances oxygen utilization. And that's important. I would also go with intravenous vitamin C and build up gradually. Ozone. But before anyone in this audience does any ozone at all, you really have to do it right. You have to ask, what are the standards, what are the studies supporting the use of it for any given condition? And let the person provide you with the actual studies. That's crucial. And a lot of times they just don't do that, and
right,
they should. And I have found that most people with chronic fatigue syndrome have elevated antibodies to Epstein-Barr in the blood. And that doesn't mean that there's a direct connection between Epstein-Barr, but it generally comes out when a person is fatigued or overworked. And that's when you also start seeing anemia. I would get mercury fillings out of the teeth. I would not take any canned fish. And I would make sure that you don't have hypoglycemia or hypothyroidism, all of which can manifest as an increase in candida and sleep problems. Also, I found that Epstein-Barr virus can increase fibromyalgia, which is a muscle disorder, causes muscle weakness and fatigue. So let's just say that you want to get vitamin C drips with glutathione. That would be good. Ask, could you speak with patients who have benefited from the therapy? The doctor, in my opinion, should not charge more for initial consultation than about $200. They should give you an hour of their time. You should have a complete blood profile done, and then you should not take ozone more or vitamin C drips more than 3 times a week, and only for 4 weeks maximum. Then you should be completely retested, and then see whether or not the therapies are bringing down your viral loads or improving your condition. If not, then stop. I know people that have been getting ozone for years. Their drains or veins are sclerosed. It's just a money-making racket for a lot of people. And I don't believe anyone should be charging more than $50 a therapy, because I know how much they make in profit. If they're doing more than that, they're exploiting people, in my opinion. Now, if you want to charge $1 million for an injection of ozone, I'm sure there's some schmucks around that would do that. They're so greedy. it'll pay for another vacation somewhere. But for the people living in the real world that have some compassion and some sensitivity, which few do, then you understand that the person who is sitting there needing your help may not be able to afford the help, even if the help is beneficial. But it's your responsibility to boycott any doctor that's exploiting you or anyone else that's exploiting you. If you don't, then you're assuming that what you're being charged and what you're given is efficacious, and more often than not, it's not. Let me just give you an example of this. I'll give you a very specific example because it was something that I saw in a major journal, the Journal of the American Medical Association. And what they found was that doctors are making an enormous amount of errors in procedures in hospitals, but the hospital makes more money, much more, when they make an error. And you don't realize, gee whiz, if you're in there for 3 days and it's $18,000 or $8,000, what happens if you're in there longer because of a mistake that you had nothing to do with, but the doctor and hospital did? Well, suddenly that $18,000 or $8,000 becomes $45,000. And so you would think that if someone made a mistake, that they wouldn't then bill you to continue treating you for the mistake they made. But it's just the opposite. You're just, you know, you're an amount of money to them. In every single medical procedure in a hospital, they make money off you. And I think it's wrong. And I don't believe if a hospital or doctor makes a mistake, that requires you to have additional hospital stay that you should have to pay for that. But in our society, it's they bill you for every service. So therefore, the more things they can get you to do, the more medications, the more money they make. It's bad. It shouldn't exist, but it does. So,
does Dr. Feldman do the ozone and C?
No. He used to do vitamin C, but he doesn't. Dr. Feldman, at this point in his career, a graded doctor as he is, he mainly focuses upon things that he knows he can really help a patient with. Neurological conditions, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, digestive disorders, thyroid. He's probably, in my opinion, the best thyroid expert in the United States. And toxicity. Allergic responses. Those are his specialties. Let me just read this to you.
Yes.
Quote, a system that rewards substandard care. The Journal of the American Medical Association study authors don't believe that surgeons and hospitals are deliberately bungling procedures to boost profits. However, they do feel that the United States healthcare system urgently needs to change the payment structure to stop rewarding mistakes. The current fee-for-service system works just like its name implies. Hospitals get paid for each service they provide. Simple math tells you that hospitals can make extra money by performing additional services. Medicare is now transitioning to a pay-for-performance system intended to reduce the rewards for medical mistakes. Right now, nearly 80% of medical payments are made on a fee-for-service basis. In the Journal of the American Medical Association study, 1,820 patients suffered preventable complications such as blood clots, pneumonia, and infection. Such problems more than quadrupled the median hospital stay, from a median 3 days for uncomplicated surgery to 14 days when adverse events occurred. For flawless surgery, the hospital netted a median profit of $18,900 compared to a profit of $49,400 when the operation went awry. Complications doubled the profit if the patient was covered by Medicare and tripled the profit if the patient had private insurance. The study used a measure of profit called the contribution margin and found that post or problem connected with spinal, neurological, and heart surgeries boosted the hospital bottom line the most. Quote, if a patient had colon cancer surgery, Medicare pays a certain fee. But if the patient gets a post-operation infection that leads to pneumonia and has to be put on a ventilator for several days, the payment for ventilator care is higher and more profitable than the payment for the original heart surgery, end quote, according to Dr. Rosenberg.
Wow.
David Goodhill, author of The Catastrophic Care, How American Healthcare Killed My Father and How We Can Fix It, offers an even more harrowing and tragic case. His dad was hospitalized to treat pneumonia and within 36 hours developed a hospital-acquired infection that led to sepsis and a gruesome death 5 weeks later. Then his mother was hit with the bill for what Goodhill calls, quote, the service of killing my father, $635,000. Quote, I had booked Dad a room at the most expensive hotel in town for the 5 weeks of his illness, filled the room with $1 million worth of hospital equipment, leased, had I done this, leased for $15,000 a month, and given him round-the-clock nursing care and paid a physician to spend an hour a day with him, roughly 50 minutes more than at the hospital, it would have totaled $150,000.
Wow.
So here's a man who goes into the hospital for generally what should be 3 days.
Yeah.
Ends up dead and is charged $635,000. And that's because of the errors the hospital made.
It's a violation of business ethics. Which, speaking of, I wanted to ask you, I'm the director of the MBA program at Wagner College in Staten Island. And by the end of the summer, we set the next spring schedule for January. I wanted to know if you'd be interested in teaching a class in business ethics.
Well, if you looked at my schedule, you'd wonder where I have a chance to eat each day. Right now, I'm finishing 10 books, 10 documentaries, and that doesn't mean that I'm not willing to do things. It means it has to fit into the schedule. So if you contacted Jeremy in my office with information, then if I have some time, I would be happy to teach. I'm always teaching somewhere. Mm-hmm. I have a full course in that I teach where I'm a professor over at Fairleigh Dickinson. But there is a need to teach people. I'm glad you brought this up, because we have lack of ethics in almost every profession. And you would think that it is counterintuitive to despoil your environment or to over-abuse the people that are your customers. But it works just the opposite in the United States, because the people who are doing the abusing control the legal system, and therefore, even when they fail with a profit. I'll give you an example. The 20 largest banks and financial institutions in the United States were virtually all insolvent. They were all bankrupt. But because they chose their own, Mr. Paulson, to be Secretary of the Treasury, he came from Goldman Sachs, and before him, Robert Rubin came from Goldman Sachs, but then went back to work at Citigroup, and then they select each other, Larry Summers and Timothy Geithner. They're all in the same small club. There's not a lot of them. And they select who's going to be the head of the Treasury, and then that person works with whoever they've chosen to be the head of. It's not the President of the United States. The President of the United States is given a list of candidates to head the Federal Reserve, and then he makes that selection, but it's always an insight. And all these people work at each other's benefit. So they were all bailed out. The total to date, it is not $16 trillion. It is not the three quantitative easings plus the initial bailout of $700 billion. It's $21 trillion.
Yeah.
But they're still insolvent, even though they're sitting on a hoard of money, in effect paper, computer money, and they're earning interest, even though they've never given that money. It's one of the phenomena of life. But if you and I in any business in the United States, if we ran our businesses irresponsibly, as corruptly, as lacking in morals and ethics, as all the major banks in America, we would not only go broke, we would also go to jail. they have not neither gone to jail nor they have they gone broke. They've gamed the system. There were over 15,000 interns trying to make it into Goldman Sachs. And why? Because once you're in the door, you're going to be making millions of dollars. And when you work yourself up the ladder, you can make tens of millions of dollars. That's the game. It's one of greed. And unfortunately, it has infected virtually every institution in the United States. But there is not a discussion on the ethics. And that's why I just said, I would never go to see any medical doctor before I knew how much time am I spending. Am I going to see or be treated by the doctor or by one of their assistants or nurses? And then what is the cost of this therapy? Now, when you get work done on your house, let's say that you have to put a new garage door up, and someone comes and says, I'm going to charge you $3,000. Yeah, the parts are going to be $2,000. And my labor's $1,000, it'll take me about 3 days to do. You can say okay or not okay. Why is it that when you go into a doctor's office, you never ask, how much of this is going to be your profit? How much of it is going to be someone else's profit? What is the actual cost? Now, could you imagine being charged $600,000 over a five-week period? And that's over $100,000 a week at a mistake they made, and no one has to give back a penny of it? And they'll get every nickel of it, then something's wrong with the system.
Absolutely.
But of course, everything's wrong with every system. Every single system we have in the United States has been corrupt. Every single one. But as long as we don't question it, then we're the fools.
Yeah.
When someone comes to me and say they've got ozone 3 days a week for a year, and I say, why? Well, because I've got herpes. Well, let me see your blood work. I'm going to see what your... Oh, it was never taken. How would you know you're benefiting? Oh, I just, you know, you just what? You're a stupid patient. And we have just a bundle of stupid patients because we're conditioned not to question authority, and the doctor is a high-level authority that we're supposed to revere and have a relationship similar to a priest. Well, A, we've seen the kind of relationships most people have with priests, and Catholic Church is still even trying to cover it up through the last pope and the pope before, is saying we don't want any more relationships with priests. And I'm saying, as bad as those priests were, doctors end up killing you if you're not smart.
Right.
So
many of the points that you and your guests make, I use in my law and ethics class. So it's well taken, and I think the students benefit by it.
All the best to you.
And Jeremy's number?
646. 926-5422.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
All the best to you. Let's go down to Maryland and say hello to Jonathan. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, Gary. No. Yes, I had a question about, well, actually, I'm taking a detox tea, and is it okay to take the detox tea? Should I do the green juices or take the detox tea?
Detox tea is not going to detox you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be confused by the names on teas. There's just not enough potency. There's not enough polyphenols. You need real chlorophyll in your
mm-hmm.
veins to detox. You need real good fibrous material, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, beta-glucan. You need good quality gut bacteria from probiotics. Then you can detox. Otherwise, you're just spending money for nothing. Okay? All the best. Alex from Pennsylvania. Hi, Alex.
Got a question. I'm having a little sluggishness on Natural Protocol. I bike like every other day, and I'm starting to integrate weights. But basically, I do 130 miles every other day. And now I'm going to integrate weight training. But normally when I was on a diet, that was like eggs, and I had wheat rolls and stuff like that, and I have changed that now.
Okay, well, if the point of the exercise is to enhance your exercise, then keep in mind it's not protein that you're really burning. It's complex carbohydrate. The amount of protein should not go up. One of the biggest mistakes in all of athleticism and all sports is bulking up on protein. And then once you reach a level, you start going beyond that. You try to overexpand that protoplasm. And that you pay a price for. That much protein is extremely toxic to the liver and the kidneys that have to break down the urea, which is the byproduct, for a simple reason. Protein is not stored in the human body. So, by keeping to 20 grams of protein and maybe 5,000 milligrams of creatine monohydrate, maybe 5,000 milligrams of D-ribose, 3,000 milligrams of L-glycine, just before a workout, you're going to maximize muscle strength and lean cuts. If you start going beyond that, A, if you take more creatine, you're going to end up with diarrhea. B, you start taking more protein, you're going to end up sluggish because it's going to adversely affect your thyroid gland and it's going to adversely affect your digestion. And it can imbalance the water and potassium-sodium ratios in the body. So that would be my suggestion. Don't overdo the protein. And also, if you're doing real intense workouts, the juicing that you want is a juicing that enhances oxygenation, which is chlorophyll, which would be like celery, cucumber, green apple. That would be a great juice. If you're working out and then want a juice to recover your electrolyte balance. Okay? All the best. And let's say hello to... Who do we have? Did I just... Where do we have? Where are we at here? Jonathan from Maryland? Jonathan, are you on? No? Did him. All right. Who else? Let's go over to Luann Panassi, who's standing by. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have something here from Mark from upstate New York, and he said that he found an article from The Independent that says that rocketing unemployment and poverty in some areas of Europe could lead to rising civil unrest unless governments take measures to address the humanitarian consequences of austerity measures. And this is from the Secretary General of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. And it says that more than half of under 25-year-olds are out of work in Greece and Spain. And in some areas of Greece, that figure has hit the 75% mark. While in Portugal, youth unemployment soared from around 30% 2 years ago to 43% now. And what he comments here in the email is that he remembers you predicting this over 4 years ago, and each year you bring it up and you say it's getting closer and closer and closer and it's going to happen soon to us. And he's asking me, or you, how in the heck are you able to figure this out? How do you know that this is happening? Because over and over and over again, you predict something is going to happen, and sure enough, it begins to happen.
There's no mystery to it. I simply look at the indices and the indicators and then couple that with understanding something about human nature. You are not going to see riots or protests in the United States. You will see them in any country where their social safety net, which they have relied upon and has been an integral part of their system since the end of World War II, is taken away or diminished. But not initially, and not by everyone. Because even in Greece, or Italy, or Spain, or Portugal, or Ireland, or England, it's very specific. You have to impact someone directly. But if you impact someone else, and then only those people will protest. And that's why the coal miners will protest if you're closing down the mines, or if... you're cutting back on social benefits for medical treatment, or you start some kind of quasi-public-private medical program, then they'll protest. But people are terrified of authority in the United States for a simple reason. We haven't forgotten Kent State. We haven't forgotten the FBI. We haven't forgotten that we have become subjects to an emperor. We haven't forgotten that we have a body politic that is corrupt at every level, state, federal, and government, where you can buy yourself a mayoralship of New York City at only $110 million. When you're worth $21 billion, that's chump change. For what purpose? The city's not better. The conditions of those who are living in poverty, 50% of all people in New York City are at the poverty level. That's 5-0. But you'll never see a show on them. You'll never see them featured. You won't see what I saw when I went out to look for an apartment for one of the people working in my office who said, Gary, I don't know what to look for. You're more up to date on all this. Could you, you know, take a look at if I find some apartments? And I walked into places that were appalling. They were so tiny. And some didn't even have a bathroom in a tiny little kitchen, one little tiny room, and yet they're asking $1,800 a month. So clearly that person has to have either a roommate or someone to subsidize them. And yet these are the people who are coming into New York because the gravitational pull, the vortex of making everything come to hot places where people do have opportunities and people are having a quality of life, but only if they can afford it. But what about all the people who can't? And then they just keep trying, but they're invisible. So when you look at how many people are suffering in the United States, how many people are suffering because they can't get a good job or can't get any job and have stopped working, especially older people are trying, how many people literally have no savings, or people who are sick and have no savings, or people who are sick and don't have a home and no savings, where people cannot afford medicine and all the other things like food that is necessary for quality of life, then you ask yourself, why aren't these people protesting? Or why aren't there any unions protesting? Weren't they supposed to be the... Well, yeah, but they're selfish and or at the top, they're more often not corrupted by their own power. And as a result, it's very specific. Or maybe I missed it. When's the last time all the unions in the United States got together and said, we're going to protest the evisceration of our constitutional rights, like the National Defense Authorization Right, or the lack of habeas corpus, or the FISA rules being broken, which were laws that should have caused all those people who broke them, including the Bush administration, to go to prison. But no one protested. Oh, yeah, of course, you know, Glenn Greenwald protested and a handful of social media progressives protested. By and large, the American people didn't. But if you didn't vote for the right person on one of these reality competitive shows, then they'll protest. That's when you see democracy working in its rush to the bottom, when they call up and say, we want that singer or that person. But if you ask that person, hey, you know, your neighbor is moving out. Have you spoken with him what it's like to have 3 kids and no place to go and you're losing your home? No. And so we've had 10 million homes that have been foreclosed on, and yet we don't have people unified. But in Europe, it's different. So you will not see any massive protests in the United States. You won't. We will have a complete fascism police state in the next 3 years. Even now, they're not even hiding how corrupt they are and how venal they are. They don't have to, because they own all the judicial judges. They own the Congress. They own the media. They own the institutions, academia. So who is there to threaten them? And when you no longer have any viable threat and you have the FBI and Homeland Security and a bunch of mindless, you know, drones willing to go after you and call you a terrorist because you protest animal cruelty or you protest deforestation, you protest genetically engineered foods, you then are the enemy in their mind. But they have no enemy. The only enemy they have is themselves. And then the question is, will they get to a point where they'll simply exploit everything till it's over? Yes. But even when it's over, they still control the over. They're the ones who will not suffer. Unless, of course, they're in harm's way when some major environmental event happens. But in Europe, they are protesting. But it has to go through 4 stages. The first stage we've seen, just like in the Middle East, you'll see the youth come out, unemployed youth. then you'll see, but you won't see people who are working and gainfully working and okay in their quality of life. You'll see those who have nothing to lose. After that, and if it gets enough media traction, if there's enough social networking on it, then they'll start to ask for change. But the people in power never change themselves. They'll throw someone like Mubarak or, you know, Gaddafi. They'll throw someone to you. I saw it in Europe or in Syria. But the people in power, the military, won't change. Or the oligarchs won't change. Or the industrialists, mercantile class, will not change. So then at a certain point, the people in their parliaments, the people that really control the country, will sell you out. They always do. That's true in France. That's true in Italy. And it's true, certainly it's been true in Greece. And then you're saying, why are you engaging this austerity program and taking away our minimum wage, taking away our food allowance, our electric allowance, our gasoline allowance? We can't afford to drive places. We can't afford to work. We're dumpster diving. And the people in parliament say, well, you know, we have to give the money back to the International Monetary Fund, or have to give back to the European Central Bank, or we have to give back to bondholders. And next thing is, as bad as it is, we're going to privatize everything in the country. And then you have your second movement. And the second movement is even the most docile of individuals, those who could sleep through a tsunami. They are the ones who will go out and protest because now they realize it's really impacting them. But until they had to lay on that bed of nails and suffer privations, they wouldn't have joined a protest. Now they're protesting. But that still doesn't change anything because it doesn't change the people in power. That takes the next step where you realize that your entire political system is so corrupt and those in power are not going to do the right thing. They didn't do the right thing in Cyprus. Instead, they allowed almost 100% of the savings and of any corporation or person above $120,000 to be confiscated by the banks and given to those people who were the debt holders, and that shouldn't happen. Now, which meant terrible suffering because there's no way anyone can make that money back in this economy, and whatever savings they had above that amount, it's all gone. So now what do you do? Well, then you get to a point which is happening now in Italy, because Italy is the third biggest economy in Europe, but it has the number one debt. It's about $3.5 trillion. And they're really angry. Then they'll start to throw out the people in the government. And only when you throw out your government and you simply say, if you go into power and you give another nickel to any banker, we're going to throw you out. And then that takes the final cycle. The final cycle is full on anarchy, where you'll see people going after the government and agencies and people in power. That hasn't happened yet in any country, but I believe in the next 2 years it will in Europe. Look at Slovakia, look at Croatia. You're certainly going to see that. You won't see it in Ireland. They've lost their will to fight, but as a country, but you'll certainly see it. You won't see it in England either, but you'll see it in Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Greece. Then it'll straighten them up. European Union is a fraud. The euro is a fraud. It's all corrupt, but it will not cause any change in the United States. Hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on the next program.
Today I'm more confused. Yet I look for the light through the pouring rain. You know that's a game that I hate to lose.